This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
I'm looking at my weather app. I don't know if you guys saw this. This Friday, 90% chance of snow. Yeah.
Well,
90% on my app.
Well, you don't want to give too much away for where you live, but I think that's more in the northern areas of the region. I don't think everybody in the listening area is expecting a 90% chance of snow, but
I do. I'll tell people I live in Maine.
Okay. Well, then I would expect that you probably had that forecast 2 months ago.
That's not true, Don. Now you're going too far.
Hope everybody's had a good day. It's so good to see Peter surviving hell in a cell. That was important. So he's back and better than ever.
You were worried about
happy for him.
Of course I'm worried about you, but I am happy for him too, Don. You know why? Because he's living his dream.
That's right. Aww. I mean, he had this kind of like deep thought on Twitter earlier today.
Yeah, I saw that. That concerned me.
Oh, you guys saw the deep thought?
Yeah. And I was going to respond to it, but I figure, listen, I got 4 hours to do it on the air. Why be a Twitter warrior when I can actually use, you know, the watts that we have here on the radio station? And I'm thinking, Peter, what do you care what people think? The people that rip into you, right, are the people that know they can't do what you do. They're the people that have to live vicariously through other people. And they hate because they know they can never reach the heights of their dream to work in hip-hop, to work in sports, to work in wrestling. Three of your biggest loves.
I'm glad you separated wrestling and sports.
Well, you have to.
Well, you have to, because that's logical.
It's entertainment.
These are people that the dream of taking a date to the prom and not like a family member was off the table.
Wow.
And now, and you're worried about it, but you know what? You use it as fuel, Peter, and good for you.
That's right.
And that's I am amazed, though, because, ironically enough, Phil Mushnick brought this up in his column on Sunday, and I couldn't agree with him more. The people that respond to trolls that have 4 or 6 followers, what are you doing? I mean, 5 years ago, I would do that occasionally, but then you figure out the algorithms. What are you doing? You just bring more attention to this creep. That's what they want.
Well, and for the record,
and I mean, big name people are doing it.
For the record, though, just so you know, I did not reply to these people.
No,
I simply expressed the some of the feelings that sometimes come, you know, because like, listen, the truth is, even though I can sometimes play a bad guy if I have to because I'm fighting with, you know, someone who seems like a bad person, the truth is I make a crappy bad guy. Like my intention is to really get along with people, and I've realized about myself that I want to be well liked. So when you do something, you know, and like you look up and the hate, I mean, even Fox, WWE on Fox's Twitter account attacked me yesterday. Their official account. I mean, there was a moment where Jerry Lawler had my head up against the cell, and WWE on Fox, their official Twitter account, wrote, "Sadly, Jerry Lawler didn't slam Peter Rosenberg's face into the cell."
You have that kind of face, let's be honest.
I can't believe that.
Yeah,
so,
you
no,
do.
I had a really great time, and I really wasn't even in a particularly sad mood, but every once in a while I feel like sometimes you want to put something out there that does kind of, you know, get the people who do support you to come out and say something nice. And I got to tell you, a lot of tremendous listeners to this program, guys. Lot of great listeners who come out and support everything we do. So I'm very grateful.
It's funny. I sent out a tweet after the game on Friday, the game 4.
Yeah.
Where I said, I love baseball. I got like 5,000 likes. And then I was reading through some of the comments, and just out of the blue, one guy goes, "I hate your guts because you support Peter Rosenberg and everything he stands for."
Oh,
out of the blue. An "I love baseball" tweet led to that.
Yeah. Which because I don't think you support everything Peter does.
No, hardly any of it. But I did write back to the guy. You bring up some salient points.
See, that's...
Yeah. And, I love baseball.
And those people will never know what you support and what you don't support. That's the irony. But they seem to know with me, and it makes them really not pleasant. Now, I will say this. That baseball game, I don't know how during the open here Michael found a way to somehow, in some weird way, throw cold water on game 4.
No, I didn't. It wasn't the greatest baseball game ever played. We'll get into that a little bit later on.
Okay, but I will say this. It was, in my opinion, the greatest sports moment of the jam-packed sports pandemic.
You might be right.
I
can buy that.
So
I think that we have a bias of recency, if that makes sense.
And
if it happened now, it's the best.
Yeah.
The seventh game of the 1960 World Series, where Mazeroski hit the home run, is considered an unbelievable game. Back and forth, 10-9 final. That was a great game. Cleveland in 2017, Cleveland and the Cubs was unbelievable.
Right.
All of a sudden, we're anointing game four the greatest of all time.
The two games you just mentioned off the top of your head were game seven. So, the greatest game of all time, it's difficult to sell in a game four, especially if the Dodgers come back and win game five like they did in game six, then it's going to lose a little bit of its luster. Now, if the Rays go on to win the World Series, that means it goes seven, and then we could really talk about that being a bigger game. But is that bigger than even game six of the 75 series with the Fisk home run?
Right, or the Joe Carter home run.
The shame of it, more so than people exaggerating the situation, that it was on a Saturday night, and it was long. It was obnoxiously long. I mean, the game ended almost at 12:30, but you didn't care because you were so exhilarated by watching it. But, again...
How did it rate, by the way?
I think 7.5 million. You knew it was going to be tough because it was a Saturday, That game deserved to be like a prime time, like during the week. But the series itself has been great. Every game has been intriguing. Every game has been kind of frustrating its own way because, Peter, the analytics have really rose up to kind of, I bite them, and I think kind of affected things a little bit, especially last night. But it's competitive. It's fun. And the players are into it.
It needs one more incredible game to be, in my opinion, an iconic World Series. It would need one more doozy.
All right, we had a doozy yesterday for the Jets, so let's start with that. This gangrene report is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Let me just say this one sentence to tell you how inept the Jets are. They had 4 total yards in the second half. There's a good chance that if all of us at ESPN 98.7 chose a team up and ran against the Bills, and we'd have Bart Scott and we'd have Chris Canty, we could probably manage 4 yards of offense. Probably. Maybe. You know how hard that is to have 4 yards of offense? And Sam Darnold finally said it. I give him credit. We'll talk to him later. We got to make adjustments. Because the Jets were moving the ball in the first half. They looked pretty good. They had a 10-0 lead.
Mm-hmm.
Their defense was holding the Bills to just field goals. And then the Bills at halftime, you could see, made defensive adjustments. And the Jets couldn't do any adjusting. They have an inability to adjust. Now, this time it was Loggins who was calling the plays rather than Gase, who surprisingly gave up the play calling before the game. And it was no different. The first half was different. The second half was not. It's distressing. Now they play the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Well, how badly I say this, how badly they're going to get beaten will depend on how much the Chiefs want to beat them badly, if that makes sense. If the Chiefs want to put their foot on their throat, they could beat them by 40. The Jets are that bad.
And I also think a lot of the Jets staying in this game, a lot of it was on the Bills. I mean, Josh Allen had almost like 400 yards of total offense. They shot themselves in the foot in the red zone. They couldn't get that touchdown. I don't want to take anything away from the Jets, but that was a Bills team probably thinking all we have to do is just show up to beat the Jets. And in the NFL, sometimes that isn't enough. Listen, the Bills are a good team, and they're going to win this division, but they're not on the same level as Kansas City. We saw that last week. They're not on the same level as Pittsburgh. They're a good playoff team, but they're not a team that can just show up and think they can throw their helmets on the field and win a game. And they're lucky that they didn't walk out of there with a loss. So, as well as the Jets played, a lot of that's on Buffalo.
Oh, I think Buffalo, for a while there, we thought Buffalo was in the A-League. Below it.
They're a playoff team, and they're going to win this division likely going away, but they're not on that level. But Kansas City is, and from what I saw, it's like it's 20.5, I think, the Jets are dogs.
Yeah, that's what it started. It'll go higher. I believe it'll go higher.
It'll get over 21. Because I think at under 21, don't you guys think that's such a safe bet? I think it's got to be 21.5 by the time we get to kickoff. And I will, Don, I think the Bills were the bottom of the top tier of the league a few weeks ago. They don't appear to be that right now. That's for sure.
But they've got components. I mean, you've got Diggs.
They're good.
As Don calls them, Tay Diggs. And then you've got, you know, a quarterback that could get the ball to them. So they've got the components. I think they're just feeling their way. But I don't think they have the components to be a Super Bowl winner this year.
No, listen, they're still early on in what could very well be in the next couple of years, that team. But still, we can sit here and talk about moral victories. The fact is that the Jets were inept offensively. So they changed the play caller. Didn't seem to matter. All right, the offensive line, the one thing that I could, if you want to look for a positive, it looks like they got their first-round pick right, all right? Because Becton does look like he's legit, but unfortunately...
And Mims look legit.
The rest of the offensive line, which was also built by the same guy that selected the left tackle, doesn't look very good. And that line is a major problem, right? And that was a bad pick by Sam in the first half. We'll talk about that with him coming up at 5:30. But that line is awful, and... We got to see a little of Mims and Perryman before he got like absolutely lit up in the second half on a big hit near the second half. It was late in the game. So there's some things, Michael, but at the end of the day, you're talking about just an absolutely inept offense that is being led by a head coach who's supposed to be a genius on the offensive side of the ball. And he gave
I'm
up his
shocked,
play calling,
though.
So what exactly is he doing, right?
Right.
I mean, the team's
0-7. He looked lost on the sideline.
He can't motivate anybody. He's now not calling plays, and the plays that are being called aren't very good to begin with. So I'm not really exactly sure what purpose he serves anymore. I mean, is this just the next step to just inevitably just making the change, Michael? Because what exactly is he doing? He's not. He has anything to do with the defensive side of the ball. Now he's not calling plays. Right? He's obviously no kind of motivator. He's obviously can't make any adjustments at the half because what little they did well in the first half completely vanished in the second half. I would really like to know, what is he doing?
I'm just shocked he gave up the Denny's menu. I mean, because that is his strength, right? All
staring
of a sudden, you see him on the sideline. He didn't know what to do with his hands.
Well, Michael, right? Like, what was it, 2 weeks ago? When he was asked about the possibility of changing the play caller, and he's like, that's like 10th on our list of problems. Well, all of a sudden, then 2 weeks later, it jumped to number one.
Unless right? Joe Douglas told him, give it up. You don't know.
I don't know. Like, but that's the thing is, who has the power to tell him to do that?
I think Joe Douglas does.
Well,
or
then if Joe Douglas has that power, then maybe Joe Douglas could have the power to say, you know what, you can't be my coach anymore.
Maybe it'll come to that. Now, it's funny. We've been saying over and over and over again, well, when exactly are the Jets going to win a game? But I will tell you this. As poorly as they played yesterday, there are teams that would lose that game. The Bills do not lose that game because they're good. But there are teams that will lose that game. And the Jets now have two games left, and this is kind of a new development. They have two games left with the New England Patriots. And I'm not going to bury the Patriots, but boy, they looked bad yesterday. Really, really bad. And they might have a quarterback situation as well because Newton looked awful. And then Stidham came in and looked even worse. So there you have it. That you play very well against them. You have a chance to beat them because their offense is not that great.
Let me ask it to you in this way. Like we always threw out, right, Peter? Well, you never know what Raider team's going to show up, so we'll put them on the table. You know, they got the Dolphin game, so we'll put that on the. That's a home game. Cleveland, they're kind of whatever. Tell me, New England isn't the best option of the teams that I mentioned? I mean, right? Mayfield threw like what a 16 touchdown passes yesterday. I mean, that game was wild. I mean, for a game that you had zero interest in to start the day, turned out to be like the best game of the season. I think it was the first game in the history of football that had like five lead changes in the fourth quarter on touchdowns.
There were
right?
some great there were some great games yesterday.
The Panther Saint game was terrific,
and of course the Cardinals
the Sunday night
Seahawks.
Game was terrific that Michael and I both nailed, and RJ by the way too.
Out of pure luck.
I mean,
I actually went away with that game. I went away from the game ten points down with what, like 5 minutes left? Never thought it.
And then the other break you caught, which was truly crazy, halfway through overtime, Arizona misses a field goal to win, and Russell Wilson's getting the ball back at his own 35 in overtime. I was sure. He would move the Seahawks.
He did not play well last night.
No.
The stats might say differently. But
no, his pick was awful.
Three bad picks.
Really, he had a few really bad picks.
And the defensive hold was the right call. But you might be...
Offensive hold.
the offensive hold as he's heading to the end zone. You might have turned the TV off.
Yep, and it was
the right call, and that changed everything. But there was some terrific games. But Cleveland's better than New England right now. I think Miami's better than New England right now. Certainly the Raiders, I think, are better than New England right now. New England might be their best shot, and it's next Monday.
I mean, listen, it's a long season, let's be clear. But at the same time, we are watching now. If Belichick doesn't figure it out over the next few games, guys, you wonder whether he kind of calls it for this year and thinks about next year. And, I mean, at this moment, if you stop everything, Tom Brady, that conversation we've been having for years, was it Brady or Belichick? Guys, right now, if you're Tom Brady, are you just smiling in bed every night?
Yes. Yes. Well, I think he smiles in bed all the time anyway, but this certainly
good point.
This certainly,
I know what you're saying there.
Makes it a broader smile, yeah.
And how about this? AB's coming to town for Tampa. And right now, over the last 2 weeks, Brady and Gronk are back.
Yeah.
Like they're starting to look the way they used to look. Gronk, it took Gronk a good few weeks to really start looking somewhat like Gronkowski. But this is, they're getting scary. They could be legitimately in the conversation, the Buccaneers.
Now, it's such a clean cut to say, well, obviously it was Brady. But one of the reasons I think Brady wanted to leave, there seems to be a lessening of talent in New England. I mean, once Gronkowski retired, that's a big weapon taken away from Brady. And, you know, he didn't have a big-time receiver. And didn't have a big-time running back.
Right.
So he probably saw the writing on the wall.
They lost four regulars to opting out.
Right.
So this shouldn't come. I think we felt that how they go this year will depend on what Cam gives them. And when Cam played well, I think they won their two games. But he has not played well. And now, if he is not going to play well, they've got... They're probably looking at, you know, a 4 or 5 win season.
I'll tell you what, though. You see the brilliance of Belichick, though. Because Cam came out and said, I'm embarrassed, and he admitted that his job may be in jeopardy. And you would think Bill, the big, tough guy, would say, oh, he's got – no. Showed him love because he knows he's a very sensitive guy. No, he's our quarterback. Am I right, Peter?
Yeah,
that shows you the brilliance
almost,
of Belichick.
Almost word for word said – They said, you know, any thoughts to making a change moving forward? He said, absolutely not. Cam's our quarterback. And they asked about Stidham, and he said, I just wanted to get him some reps because, you know, basically it was trash talk.
Well, but this might be difficult for especially Jet fans to hear because they don't like Bill Belichick, and a lot of people hate Bill.
I don't.
But it's also kind of a good guy move too, right? I mean, he's got no ties to Cam beyond this year, right? So maybe it just felt like, listen, the guy's a mess. He's probably a better option than anything we already have. But, like, what do I want to just destroy the guy for? Right? Because where's Cam going to go? If they bench him here, then Cam's probably done.
Well,
right? And I think Bill realizes
somewhere.
His team's probably not going anywhere. So why destroy the kid? Right? Right? I mean, isn't it the right thing to just, you know,
well, and also,
give him a little bit of a pep talk? Why destroy him? It's not going to help the team to destroy him, but
so
it could ruin his career.
I didn't watch the Patriots. I only saw some highlights. But guys, what I saw in those highlights in Cam was a guy who's just completely kind of unsure of himself. He's not throwing the ball with the same confidence that he even was throwing at the start of the season. So I think Belichick just knows he's dealing with a guy who it may be physical, but it's partially mental with him, and he wants to try to keep him afloat.
Did you guys happen to see, I mean, there were so many games to switch back and forth to, the pass that Tom Brady made into the corner of the end zone for the touchdown?
Oh, my God.
I mean, to say that his arm is diminished, I don't see it. Making it's every throw. That was perfect.
It's as good a throw as I've seen this season. Gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous.
He's good.
That's the Gangrene Report, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. And I will wrap up what the Jets did yesterday. You know, they're giving Greg Williams credit. I don't think the Bills punted.
No, they didn't.
They didn't punt. You're going to give the defense credit? Now, that's more on the offense. They can't punch it through for a touchdown. They had, so 6 field goals. He missed 2. There's 10 field goal attempts.
But let's just say that he did step up and did a great job. All right, but how does it explain the previous 6 games when
right.
they didn't?
But I will tell you this. I think the Jets are going to win a game this year. I really do.
Well,
now, I hope that somebody else wins, too, so the Jets still have the number one pick. But I believe the Jets will not go winless. They'll run into one.
I'm kind of with you because what yesterday reminded you is on any given Sunday, you know, if a team comes in and just plays god-awful and the Jets play out of their mind, that they could win a game. So when will that be? I don't think it'll be Sunday.
Now, we do have to ask Steve Young this later. He has said this. Dan Orlovsky kind of quasi-agreed. But Sam has to take the team on his back in the second half. There's no way you have four total yards. There's no way. There's no way a big-time quarterback, even with no one surrounding him, should have four total yards. What was he, 2 for his last 12?
Yeah.
That's disgraceful.
I mean, the line's awful. He hadn't played in a couple of weeks. I mean, yeah, I guess you're
right.
But
he looked good in the first half, so what happened in the second half? He made good throws in the first half. That's a mess. And then Orlovsky said it on Get Up today. I think Ryan Clark agreed. You take a look at what Joe Burrow did yesterday. You take a look at what the kid with the Chargers did. Those guys are miles ahead of both Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold. And you can't say about lack of talent. What talent does he have in Cincinnati? Joe Burrow makes great throws, makes great reads. Those guys are miles ahead of both New York quarterbacks. You might not like me for saying that, but just look at your eyes. Look at your. I don't have to be Vince Lombardi to see. They're miles ahead of both Darnold and Jones, and they're in their first year.
Yeah, line play does have something to do with that.
But the Bengals are not exactly, you know, they don't exactly have Anthony Munoz there. Come on.
No, I know they don't. And it was ranked a very low.
I was waiting for Munoz.
It was ranked very low to start the season. And I'm not going to sit there and watch every play the way I watch the Jets and the Giants. But, you know, you're not getting a lot of help. But I can't argue with you that there's got to be moments. I think you see some with Jones. You saw moments with Jones. But, yeah, this is inept. It's ineptitude. The offense of both the Jets and the Giants, especially the Jets, you get nothing. You get zero. So is there, yeah, we can ask Steve Young. Well, I guess there's nothing left to ask. These seasons are over as far as them making the playoffs are concerned. Although, boy, the NFC is doing everything humanly possible to keep it alive, where the Redskins might end up being the team to beat by its all time.
They don't exist, Don.
And you should be just, as every win, every week goes by, the Rivera decision's going to get worse and worse, Peter. It's going to get worse and worse.
Well, I mean, right now, they win that game. They're in first place alone, right?
Alone. Yep.
And by the way, good news, Ron Rivera had his final chemo.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, of course. You know, I'm just talking about the coach, not the person.
No, I'm just saying good news.
I mean, that's great, and that should be more important than anything else that's going on in his world. But Peter's right. You win that game, you're all alone in first place with wins against Dallas, Philadelphia, and the Giants. So you'd own the tiebreakers. You'd have a full game lead on everybody. I mean, it'd be ridiculous. And you can't say, well, look, come on, eventually the cream will rise to the top. What is the cream? I guess it's Philadelphia now, right? Because they at least have the chance to get healthy. Dallas looks done.
Also, can we have some love, by the way? Can we have some love for our adopted college coach? How about Shiano? Goes into Michigan State and wins the game. They never win Big Ten games.
I got to tell you, I watched a lot of that game. They looked fabulous. They looked fabulous. You know, they were an 11-point dog.
Yep.
And they really controlled that game from the get-go. And the other thing that shocked me, I don't know if you guys watched this, Clemson didn't come close to covering the 45 against Syracuse.
And you know what? We should have known that because three of the last 4 years, Syracuse has played them right down to almost the last minute.
I mean, they ended up winning like by 20 or whatever, but it was 27-21 at one point.
You think the Jets' Chiefs spread will get to 45?
Close.
Yeah, could.
I just wondered if people, because of just the fact that they played well defensively and hung in the game against Buffalo, will you see some money go the Jets' way? To either bring that down or keep it at 20.5?
I mean, someone's going to do it.
Because let's face it, in the NFL, I wouldn't touch that game where it is now. Because who knows, in the second half, the teams don't care. Right, they could have a 45-0 lead going into halftime, and then did not care, not play starters in the second half. That's going to get too high.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen, I made a very daring, some might say irresponsible, three-point pick on Thursday.
Terrible pick.
And it could be something that could have haunted me the whole year. It could have been something that cost me the competition. It's something that cost me some sleep. I'd make the pick again, though. But boy, Don and Peter really buoyed my spirits by blowing both of their three-point picks in a big way. That's, but none more so than Donald.
No.
Yeah, come on. Don's in a different class this week.
Don, your team was never in it.
That's fine. I mean,
Don took the Cowboys, by the way, over the Washington football team. I was so certain about it, too. Would you make the same pick again, Don?
I mean, obviously, I made my three-point play. But no. You can't compare it to the colossal whiff that you had because you spent, like, the first 30 minutes of the show saying it was a lock. I just got a pick wrong. Peter got a pick wrong. You know, I lose three-point plays all the time. You know, that happens. But I didn't have the conviction that you had.
So yeah, but all that matters is how does it affect the competition? No, and I'm just I lost 1 point by my stupidity.
Look at it that way. Well, that's the classic baseball thing. Well, I didn't lose any ground. But you know what? You didn't gain any ground either. You know, if you didn't make that pick and you used it on something logical, then you would have gotten three and you would have passed me. But now you're a point behind me. And right. I have the tiebreaker right now because I have 2 wins ahead of you. So
a lot of football left.
Oh, there's a lot. No. There's a lot of football. But you could choose all you want to say, oh, it's no problem. I do it again because I didn't lose any ground. Yeah, but you could have gained some ground and missed that opportunity.
But you
and
had
Peter
to be.
And I made selections, and our three-point picks showed the conviction that we had in those selections by making it our three-point pick.
So I just added some verbiage to my conviction.
And it made you look like a moron and embarrassed.
No, I don't think so.
To the point where you should be humiliated.
But you
don't
think so. At least my pick
shows you what a problem it is.
There were moments when I thought my pick had a chance to come in right down to the very end. But you had to sit there and know you blew a three-point pick from the very, very beginning.
You could spin this all you want, Michael. You're
Peter,
not
join in here, please.
Well, it was a bad pick, Don. Now, I wouldn't make, if I'm Michael, the argument that it surpasses him, because you're right, he spent an entire day touting his pick. So, Michael, I mean, you literally preemptively hung on the rim. So I can tell you, I think Don had one of the worst picks of the year, but he never claimed it to be one of the best picks of the year either. That's the hard part.
But my point is, I'm fine, though. Because I look at the overall picture, I'm fine.
You're in denial.
I'm not in denial.
Michael,
there's never been anything on this show. I am
honestly
not.
There's never really been anything on this show that has universally been panned the way your behavior was last Thursday. So
it was disgusting.
Just own
abhorrent
it.
Behavior.
But don't try to spin or try to... What you're doing is the old okey-doke, right?
It's an okey-doke.
Look over here while the magician pulls this out of his hat. No. The people, you're not going to... We're not... Whatever you're selling, people aren't buying. All right? I made a bad pick. It was over from the get-go.
No, your pick was...
Won't be
your
the last
pick was
time.
Horrendous. Mine was not horrendous.
It won't be the worst pick.
No, it'll be the worst pick you make all year.
We never judged. We never judged the pick. That was never what was in question. We never judged the pick. We judged your attitude about the pick. And
Peter, you don't escape either. You picked the Jets.
No, but it's the same thing. He was wrong.
I picked the Bills. And I went with...
Oh, yeah, the Bills.
I went with statistics, which was...
And you love Green Bay. You wouldn't even add a droplet of sweat down the forehead.
I'm so angry. Do you want to know the irony? Don, do you know who talked me off Green Bay?
It had to be Ballard.
That's right. I wrote Ballard yesterday. I said, how about the irony of you talking me off the Packers? That's why you can never talk to a fan. Fans will just be like, oh, no. I'm worried. I knew they'd have a bounce back. And instead, I just, you know how different yesterday? What a huge opportunity if I get the three-point game right.
Ballard misunderstood.
Don't start, well, because
don't
he's
start
not
analyzing the picks. Because you know what? I went 2-1.
So did I. Second week
and
in
you
a row.
Went 1-2.
Crawling back.
Yeah, but I would have gone 2-1-2, except that I had 9.5. I lost by 10. I'm fine with everything that happened this week. Might I have pulled back a little bit? Absolutely not. I'd do it all again.
Wow. It's a really strong take by you.
Let's go to the polls. I don't know how much you watch that, but you know, your boy Marone going for it on fourth down from like his own 35.
But he had to. He was down by 9 with 4 minutes left. He had to. Did you guys see how the Falcons lost?
Oh my gosh. Unbelievable.
They wanted Todd Gurley to run the ball and stop at the 1 yard line. Then they'd kick a field goal. They'd run down the clock to 3 seconds in the game, kick a field goal and win it. He could not stop his momentum from going into the end zone to score a touchdown. Which gives Matthew Stafford a chance to come back, and he did.
Right.
And they won just because Gurley could not stop his momentum from going into the end zone.
And let's face it, you can't think of a worse quarterback to give extra time to in the NFL than Matthew Stafford. Right?
Stafford is one of these guys, I don't know if you agree with me, Don, if he was in a better situation, he would be looked at as unbelievable.
He's Archie Manning.
Yeah, great.
He's Archie Manning.
How does he not get out of there? Like, how did he not?
Because they're paying him a lot of money to remain.
Money talks.
Because that is such an interesting point, guys. And he may now be, maybe he's crossing the age where it doesn't matter. But like a year or two ago, there are teams where he goes there. Like if Indianapolis had the option to, I mean, I guess it's okay with Rivers, but Stafford could have had a second life with the chart.
Might have won a Super Bowl.
Right. If he had gone to Los Angeles to be on the Chargers, he could have a whole – Washington, all these teams that desperately just need a quarterback, and you just feel like he's going to accumulate all these statistics, and no one even sees it.
Let's go to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. We started with the Jets, so let's hand the ball off to Ira in Staten Island, who's really seen this year of bad football. Ira.
Hey, Michael, good afternoon, fellas.
What's going on?
It's just every week you just can't make it up. You know, the first half, it's a tale of two halves. I get it. Bills made the adjustments. Jets didn't. I mean, everybody knows it. But the bottom line here is I'm not talking about the coaching staff anymore. You know, their fate is sealed. The bottom line here is you drafted a quarterback with the third pick. You traded away 3 second-round picks. And now you're going to end up having to trade this kid because, A, number one, partly his fault. Part two, coaching, and part three, the organization didn't do the right thing by him. And this is what you saw yesterday. I mean, that interception he threw is a rookie mistake. You can't be making that, in year three. And then he hits Berrios on a 3rd and 20, and I think that's how he's going to be his whole career. It's going to be this inconsistent quarterback, and it's unfortunate because coming out of USC, you know, everybody said, well, he's an Ben Roethlisberger, you know, he's going to be a franchise quarterback. And you know what? That just shows you.
Ira, I disagree. I really disagree that you can take anything about Sam and say this is who he's going to be.
But he doesn't read the field, Peter. You could see it clearly. He never goes through his progressions. I know he doesn't have time, okay? But look at his first year with Bowles. He made more progress his rookie year with Bowles and Bates.
Exactly.
Game one.
And he can make progress again with someone else. He's on a defunct offense.
But I think so much damage, I think, is done already. He needs a lobotomy.
You're both right. You're both right. I think in the right situation, he could shake the whole interception thing and become a great quarterback. Right now, he's a mess. These 2 years have killed him. Between missing time because of the mono and the injury to the shoulder the last couple of weeks, he's probably not even 100% from that, right? Because he didn't play last week, and it wasn't until Wednesday or Thursday we found out there was a chance that he could play. His offensive line stinks. There's no creativity offensively. There's nobody to lean on. At least when Josh McCown was here, there was somebody that he could talk quarterback with. I mean, I don't know. Is Flacco that guy? I mean, I'm not saying Flacco's a bad guy, but is Flacco like really thinking about I'm here to help Sam, or is he just trying to keep another year in the NFL? I don't know. But the kids just they just destroyed him. It's not going to work. Even when they change the quarterback, guys, it's not going to work.
But everybody's blaming what they did. They malpractice what they did. Okay.
Yeah.
He's got to take some of it. He's got to own some of it. Why is he still making those decisions?
Well, he does own it when he can.
Michael, you got to realize he's been damaged from the get-go, okay? First of all, he's got, or he's rookie year, right? He's got a defensive head coach, and basically his offensive coordinator is a guy that isn't even in the league anymore, all right? And that's why Josh McCown was getting paid $10 million to kind of help him out. Then those guys are all gone. He comes back with a completely different coaching staff, a completely different system. Guy's supposed to be a quarterback whisperer, and now we're seeing he has no idea what he's doing. Okay? So that's been his 3 years of coaching that he's had, right? A journeyman backup quarterback and a guy that's supposed to be a quarterback whisperer who apparently doesn't even know what he's doing. So
no, I get all that, but Burrow's only been in the Bengals system for a little bit. I mean, there's got to be some things that are innate that you should know how to do, how to check down and not make the wrong decisions. It can't be all coaching. Some of it's got to be on him.
I think you're right, Michael. Some of it is on him. But I don't know whether a good young quarterback can outdo bad coaching. I just don't know if he can.
A good young quarterback should be able to get more than 4 total offensive yards in the second half. Sorry.
I mean, I'll say this. The one thing that concerns me, guys, is like, what's your – when you think of Kyle Allen, like what level quarterback do you think of?
C. And maybe a D+.
So he's better than Sam, guys. I mean, right now he is. Like I've now watched the Jets – I watch the Jets almost every week. I watch Washington every week. Kyle Allen right now plays better football than Sam Darnold, and that you're talking about a guy who's just basically a backup. That's reason for concern.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Darnold in the shotgun, P-Ron to his left. Take the snap. Here comes the blitz. Darnold under pressure, buried behind the line and sacked.
We just got to continue to get better week after week and look at ourselves in the mirror and figure out what we're doing wrong and how we can get better.
Darnold back to throw, fires one left sideline, and that one is intercepted by Dane Jackson.
Second half, we just couldn't move the ball in the second half.
Sam Darnold takes the snap. 4-man rush. Looks right, throws right. The ball batted down at the line. It caroms around, and it's intercepted on the carom by Jerry Hughes.
We're not going to have the mindset of being scared or something like that.
You start to look down the schedule and try and find a win, and they're not easy to come by. The final score here at MetLife Stadium, the Jets fall to 0-7 on the season as the Bills kick 6 field goals, and it's enough to beat the Jets 18-10.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
This portion of the Mike K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by the New York City Vision Zero Initiative. More pedestrians are hurt in crashes around sunset than any other time. If you don't drive carefully, ask yourself, is it worth it? With daylight saving time ending, Vision Zero reminds you, slow down. All right, we've been talking football or jet football. I don't know if it's the same thing. And
Football of Jays.
And now we will shift to baseball. I've seen a lot of baseball games in my life. A lot. And I always enjoy it when I could be watching a game or even doing a game, and there's a moment where you're just like euphoric that you're watching this. And that's what I felt in the 9th inning of game 4, where you see something that you've never seen. And it was wonderful. You saw a kid that had not had a hit in a month, hadn't had a bat in almost as long in Brett Phillips. He's the last guy essentially on the bench other than the last catcher. How many people would have bet that he was going to get a hit? So it was a storybook right there. He gets the hit. That scores Kiermaier to tie the score, which is, you figure where it's going to end.
Right.
And then a Rosarena running from first sees that Chris Taylor, the third base coach, saw that Chris Taylor had bobbled the ball. And I don't understand why he was rushing it, because there's no way they were going to get Kiermaier running with 2 outs. He's really fast. So just field the ball, get the ball in. Rosarena is at third. Phillips is at first. Try to get the final out. And go to extra innings. Instead, he rushes it. Then Rosarena tries to score. He falls. He pulls a Daniel Jones is what he does.
Right.
Completely.
But the way he fell was so athletic. He kind of tucked his shoulder in. It was like a tuck and roll when you fall out of a car. You remember those days, Don?
Sure.
And then got back up. And the catcher, Will Smith, doesn't know that he fell, knows that he's coming home. And the throw from Muncy on the cutoff, he's swiping the tag around to make the tag, and he doesn't take the ball with him. The ball gets by him. A Rosarena essentially crawls home, touches home plate, end of the game. Classic. And by the way, I tweeted this out yesterday. I know that there are a lot of irrational haters of Joe Buck who think that he hates your team. He's so great at what he does. He nailed that call to such an extent because there were so many moving parts. If you've ever been in the booth, if you've ever tried to call play-by-play, even on TV, you cannot fathom how hard that call is because so many different things are happening at the same time. And he nailed it and made a perfect call.
And can I just jump in and say one thing?
Yep.
And this is not the words of Michael Kay or Don LaGreca. It's Peter Rosenberg. On Saturday, I read the ridiculous article by Phil Mushnick crushing Joe Buck and Troy Aikman for Thursday Night Football, making Thursday Night Football sound like it was some debacle and like Joe Buck is a hack who will never... Literally, within hours of reading this thing, where I'm like, who is he watching? Like, who attacks Joe Buck? And listen, everyone can have taste. It's not a big deal. But for a critic to rip someone and say they're not good... Hours later, I watch him make the baseball call of a lifetime on the biggest stage imaginable. Up yours, Mushnick. You suck.
Oh,
Joe
stop.
Buck is tremendous.
I mean, that's his job, is to criticize people.
But okay, but you can't make it up. Joe Buck's one of the greatest of all time. What are you saying?
What was his issue on Thursday?
Oh, well, he said that they talk a lot and they use a lot of stats and stuff. I mean, but the bottom line with Phil is this. Okay, I didn't think we'd devolve into this. Phil thinks there's one perfect broadcaster, and that's Mike Emmerich. And everybody thinks that, too. And everybody else has to measure up to Mike Emmerich, and none of us do. Fine, I've accepted it. I'm not Mike Emmerich. I'm not as good as Mike Emmerich.
Here's the deal, all right? And then we can move on to actual conversation. All right, he doesn't have to be your cup of tea, all right? Jim Nantz is not my cup of tea. I'm not going to say he's not a great broadcaster, because he is.
But that's Phil's job, though.
Style,
he's allowed
to say
this stuff.
But here's the thing. You're going to talk about them talking too much. Listen, I love Doc Emmerich. The guy talks. All right? If you're irritated by conversation, then Mike Emmerich should irritate you. Because Mike Emmerich talks. He tells stories during hockey games, which are very fast-paced, and sometimes he's wedging those stories in.
Yes.
I happen to love it. But you can't sit there and say, they're talking too much, and then you love Doc Emmerich. Doc Emmerich talks a lot, too. So there's inconsistency there, all right? But whatever. Let's move on to something that's
Buck was, just in closing, Buck was tremendous. What a great call.
Buck was interviewed yesterday on MLB Network. And he said something that I hadn't even thought of. Because Buck, like all of us, during the regular season, was doing the game off of a screen.
Mm-hmm.
He said, if we were doing the game off a screen, I could not have made that call.
No.
There's no way the camera could follow everything. So I'm watching what is unfolding and that Chris Taylor bobbled the ball and that a Rosarena. He said that would not have been apparent on the screen, which was a great point. Anyway, so they win that game, which was a great, fun game. All the lead changes. They scored in 8 different half innings in a row, which is a World Series record. But if anything, this has always been the case. People talk about momentum. I don't buy momentum specifically, especially in baseball, because of the fact that momentum goes as far as the next day's starting pitcher.
Yep.
A crushing loss by the Dodgers. Crushing. They won yesterday 4-2. So did it have any impact on yesterday at all? No.
But that could also be a credit to the Dodgers for not allowing it to get to them. But baseball is not that way because Kershaw had nothing to do with that game, so he just goes on and does his job.
Right.
Which, by the way, maybe he's kind of changing history as far as him not being great in the
postseason.
Well,
the narrative of his history.
Or at least the narrative, right, because if they win this series, he's probably going to be a major reason for it with his performances in Game 1 and Game 5. But I guess that's the difference, right? Because a crushing loss like that in hockey, that means a goaltender probably gave up a goal. Well, guess who's probably between the pipes in the next game, right? If it happens to a basketball team, the same 5 guys are probably going to be out on that court to start the next game. So it could all affect them.
And I also think, Don, that in sports that you can out-physical somebody, you can have some momentum carry over. Baseball, you don't out-physical anybody. You don't. You just don't. Here's the thing that I took exception to. So the Dodgers are up 3-2, and they could close it out tomorrow. We could have a Game 7, which I would love, because then it's going to be Walker Buehler against one of the great Game 7 pitchers in our generation, Charlie Morton. It'll be amazing. But right away, the instant hot take is that is the greatest World Series game you'll ever see. And I call it, I don't know if I made this up or if I read it, so I think I made it up, recency bias.
No, you did not make that up.
You've heard that before?
Yes, you definitively
the fact
did not
that
make
you
that
even
up.
Had
okay.
the goal to throw it out there as a possibility.
I had never heard, I thought I dreamed it up. Anyway, it's all right, the bias of now. I'll
make
it my
new.
Own.
Never heard that.
The bias of now. It happened now, so it has to be the best. I will tell you personally, I have seen better World Series games than that. And I'll rattle them off right now. Game 4 and 5 and Game 7 in 2001 were all better games than that. Especially Game 7 when Mariano Rivera blew a lead and blew a World Series. How's that not a better game than a Game 4?
Well,
that Game 7 in 1960. Game 7 in the Indian and Cubs World Series. Stop with
see,
the greatest
the
game.
One.
Can't we just say it's one of the greatest games we'll ever see?
Right,
but it's a Game 4.
But and it's tough for a Game 4 because, again, if the Dodgers win tomorrow, then what did it all mean? Right? They didn't even win another game.
Even if they do win, it still meant something. It's a phenomenal game.
No, it's a phenomanal game. But I think
the Yankees lost Game 7, Game 4 and 5 at Yankee Stadium with home runs off Byung-Young Kim. Well, they were unbelievable games.
See, this is where you kind of lose me a little bit on it, Michael, about those Yankee moments. Those games are remembered for the way that it ended. You just mentioned, yeah, we're going to remember Saturday for the way that it ended, but there were runs in 8 consecutive half innings. The back and forth was incredible. That was a tremendous game from the first pitch on, right? It wasn't that, yeah, there were crazier moments than ended games, right? But that's a game like even the Fisk home run. We remember the Fisk home run, that game because of that home run. But this game, I think, has got a chance for all the lead changes and the moments. I think it's on the table. I understand
yeah,
your recency
six,
bias,
the
but I
Mets
think it's
in
on the table.
86 was a great game.
It was a great game.
But again, I'm okay with saying it's one of the great World Series games you'll ever see. But so many people said this is the greatest World Series game ever. No, it's not.
No, but you haven't seen every single World Series game. That is ridiculous. But even the 86 Game 6, Michael, a lot of that was like from the seventh inning on, right? This was amazing from the very first pitch. This game was intriguing. You were totally into it. The back and forth was incredible. The one game I would compare it to recently would be Game 7 in 2016 between the Indians and Cubs, which automatically makes that the better game because it's a Game 7 as opposed to Game 4.
And Donnie, I really believe that was a better game than Game 4. That was an unbelievable game.
But this is the one time where I can really understand it when they throw out the instant classic. That was an instant classic.
It was 100% instant classic. My tweet was, I went on Twitter that night and just said, this is the best event that's happened during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I like that tweet.
I think it was the most exciting moment, and it tickled me that it was baseball that had that. I thought it was awesome.
No, it was good. You know, it was crazy. I mean, there's been some moments, I guess, what would be close to it. I guess one of the...
there were some great basketball moments.
Yeah, the one game between the Heat and the Lakers, there was that great game.
Oh, the Davis buzzer beater.
Right. So there's been a couple of but that still, considering it was a World Series, very much in doubt because let's face it, the Dodgers take a 3-1 series lead, maybe things change. Hey, listen, it's over. It would have been over yesterday, right? So the fact is that it was a Game 4 kind of hurts a little bit, but the fact that it evened the series, and I'm really rooting for the Rays to win. I have no dog in the fight at all. Right? But to get a Game 7, for the possibility of that Game 7 to be great, then we can legitimately have a conversation of this being one of the best World Series in a long time. For it to go 7, there hasn't been any blowouts, right? I mean, every game has been pretty intriguing, right? Within 2 runs, if not 1-run games. So I think that's got some real potential if we can get to the Game 7, because I think it's difficult to have a classic series without a Game 7. So if the Dodgers were to win tomorrow,
no, then it ends
really
up a good
series, fun series, but right. We need a Game 7 here.
I agree that if you don't get a Game 7, you know what, Don? I'll go one more. If the game tomorrow night ends up being a Dodger win, but it's an absolute utter classic, in which they walk off or something like that, I think it could enter that area also. But now, you'd love to see seven.
Now,
the other angle about if you watch yesterday's game, for Yankee fans that are upset that the Yankees are analytic-driven, the Dodgers and the Rays go, hold my beer. I mean, Dave Roberts, that game was pre-planned. Why would you take out Kershaw dealing in the sixth inning? Now, he ended up looking good because Dustin May comes in throwing 101 miles an hour. And then why would you take him out? Because you don't want him to face G-Man Choi? So then you bring in your lefty Gonzalez and they counter with Brasso and he walks him right away. And then because of the new rule, you have to face three straight batters, he's got to face a Rosarena, yeah, who swung at the first pitch and popped it up. But everything the guy did was pre-planned. Except for he learned I'm not bringing in, I don't think you're going to see Kenley Jansen in any safe situation tomorrow or Wednesday. He had to bring in Blake Trinan because Kenley Jansen has blown what is it, five World Series games?
And the other thing too, Michael, and I wonder if this got talked about at all and if you thought about it. What's Jansen doing on that last play? He should be backing up behind home plate, at least with a building that's not full or loud. He could have maybe communicated to Smith that he could relax and not rush because the Rosarena had fallen down. If he knew that he fell down, he could have played that ball instead of trying to rush. But you know what? Jansen was caught between home and third. He didn't go anywhere. He didn't back up third. He didn't back up home. What are you doing?
Yeah, I think he had his dobber down. That was inexcusable.
Well, that's a bad job because at least the benefit of having a half-empty building or like three-quarters empty is he probably could have communicated to Smith, relax. You don't have to rush. But, right, he's shot, right? I mean, the Dodgers.
If you watch him, he doesn't have stuff to get people out anymore.
No, the best he was in the Braves series when he got out, and I thought the Braves rushed that by swinging at the first pitch. No, they're going to have to try to piece this together. But this whole looking for a reason to how many batters did Kershaw retire in a row?
He after that first couple of innings, he settled in, and also I've said this before, Don said it before. It's the constant search for a pitcher that doesn't have it. If you're going to bring in six guys, there's a good chance they're not all going to be on game.
And if
you're trying to find somebody who doesn't have it.
And this is where the sport's going because they're both doing it.
Yes.
Right? And if this is where the sport's going and the Yankees want to be that analytic team, and this is what I was kind of teasing during our soft open is, I mean, how is it going to end up for Cole? Like, I'm paying all this money for a guy that I'm going to be looking to take out of a big spot?
Oh, I don't think they'll do that. I think Cole supersedes that.
You would think. You would hope. But you know what? Does it matter about history? If Kershaw's dealing, leave him in. Why are you looking for a reason to go to a bullpen, hoping that guy is going to be as good as the guy you're taking out?
Now, if we sat the Dodger people down right now, they would say, how'd that work out? And we'd have to get worked out great. Every guy you went to bailed out your dumb mistake. Kershaw could have gone longer. And I give Kevin Cash credit because I thought he stayed with Glasnow longer than he should have. He's trying to get five innings out of him, so his bullpen could be somewhat rested for the last two games. If they didn't have a day off today, right now, all of the relievers through a postseason without days off, they are completely gassed. Completely gassed. And if you're going to continue to play baseball like this, and if you're going to have 28-man rosters, you really do have to have maybe 15-man pitching staff. You have to. If you're going to use relievers like this, you are going to have 15-man, especially during the playoffs, because you cannot continue to go to them every single day. I think we saw with the Yankees. At the end of that series against the Rays, their relievers were running on fumes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Rays relievers are running on fumes. Diego Castillo is not the same pitcher he was against the Yankees. There's no way. His stuff is not nearly as sharp. Anderson, who was unhittable during the season, is not nearly the pitcher that he was. They're all gassed. And this is after a 60-game season, not a 162-game season. But so far, it has been a fun World Series. You look at the Dodgers, they are so much more talented than the Rays. But the Rays still have a very good chance to win it. Dodgers have better pitching. The Dodgers have a much better lineup. Dodger defense is sparkling, and just like the Rays, they have so many interchangeable parts. You could turn, you could see Max Muncy here, Kiki Hernandez there. They switch people around, and there's no negative. There's no negative. How many teams have that? I mean, if you want to look at the local, do the Yankees have a guy that could play anywhere? You've got LeMahieu that could play first, second, and third. That's pretty good. But he can't really play in the outfield at a level that you'd feel comfortable. They don't have anybody like Tyler Wade could play some outfield, but not at the level that he could play shortstop and second. They've got guys that they could plug anywhere. Now, can I say one thing about the Rays that...
Please.
Stop with the four outfielders. You got to sit me down, and you got to show me when there was ever a play during the season when you went to four outfielders that that play would not have been made with three. Because you're opening up too much of a hole in the infield to go with four outfielders. Show me the time that that's taken away a hit. I think it's all eyewash. Look how smart we are.
Yeah, it's a bit much. It is
too
so
much.
Weird. It's so
and I
weird.
I hate it. It's just whack.
It is crazy.
Sometimes it's just whack.
But you know what? You know what, Peter? The way that game ended is why you want to see more balls in play, because things like that happen. That's what's entertaining. That's the problem with a walk and a strikeout and a home run. Yeah, home runs are fun, but you get desensitized to them. But when you put the ball in play, things like the way that game ended Saturday happen. That's what's entertaining.
Did you see what Brett Phillips, the kid who got the hit, did you read the story by Tom Verducci in SI, the game story?
No.
It was brilliant. If you get a chance, go online. It was brilliant. But anyway... Friday, so game three was Friday, right? Yeah,
yes.
And game four, the great game, was on Saturday. Saturday.
Yep.
Friday was Tom Verducci's birthday. So he's standing on the other side of the field from where the Rays dugout is before the game. He's doing a live hit, and across the field, marching from the Rays dugout, is Phillips with a baseball. And he goes, happy birthday. Tom goes, thanks, Brett. He goes, I'm giving you a signed World Series baseball signed by Brett Phillips. I'm sure this is going to be worth something someday. And so Tom Verducci goes, you know what? It would be worth something. He goes, well, he goes, if you get a walk-off hit to win a World Series game.
Come on. You know what? I'm calling it.
So then the next day he does. And Brett Phillips, who, by the way, was hyperventilating, and had a standing pulse of 140 10 minutes after what happened.
I saw, I don't remember which teammate it was who came over to him. You could see it with his...
Kiermaier.
Lips.
He couldn't breathe.
You could see Kiermaier like, are you okay? Are you okay?
He thought, it looked like he was going to pass out. And I'm 140. The trainers were like tending to him. And he got enough breath to walk up to Verducci. He goes, it's worth something now, right? The guy is like a career minor leaguer, bounced around. They got him right before the trade deadline. They hardly ever used him. I mean, that's what moments, those are sports moments that make you feel goosebumps. I mean, I never thought that kid was going to get a hit. How many people out there really thought that? His family probably didn't think he was going to get a hit.
Which, by the way, Michael, I would argue, is why, whether it annoys you or not, people in the moment say it might be the greatest World Series game they've ever seen. It had a lot of elements that just made you kind of freak out with how good it was.
If you want to say it's the greatest World Series game you've ever seen, I can't tell you what you've seen, but you can't say it's the greatest World Series game ever played.
No.
I understand.
Because it just in the last 4 years has been a better one.
But you got to say it's in the conversation. It's definitely in the conversation.
I say it's in the top 15.
I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that's one of the greatest World Series games ever played.
That's fine. Fun, great storylines.
How deep does one of go?
Yeah, because everybody has a different opinion on what makes great.
And also, maybe I'm wrong, but this is attached to a series. If the Dodgers win tomorrow, it takes a lot of spice out of that game. Because as entertaining as it was, what did it all mean at the end of the
day? See, but that's your
Dodgers
sickness.
Dodgers win the next two
that's
games.
That's your sickness because you don't think Andy Chavez made a great catch because the Mets didn't win the World Series.
But I think it's all attached there. When you talk about the stories, it's really hard to start talking about that game and then what happened? Like if you made a movie about that game, right? Then you as you're rolling credits, you're gonna have to have a narrator go and they went on to lose the next two games and lose the series.
Right, the miracle of ice would not have been great if the USA lost a game after Russia.
Well, that's the feeling, right?
Right. It still wouldn't take away from the magnificence of beating a Russian team that had professionals on it.
But it's not getting listed as the greatest upset of all time. It wouldn't have made the cover of Sports Illustrated, right? Herb Brooks said going into that game against Finland, if we lose this game, we'll take it to our graves, meaning it would have just blown up everything.
I don't know, but hold on. How about this, though, Don? Linsanity went on to mean absolutely nothing.
Great point. Oh, you're brilliant. That's why you have all these jobs.
Nothing special with that team, and his ending in New York was terrible.
Right,
and
stands alone.
It was still an iconic thing we'll never forget.
Well, it's right, but I don't know how iconic it ends up being as if it turned out that he ended up leading the team to the playoffs.
All right, 2001 World Series.
Imagine what it would be if it turned out to be a great series.
2001 World Series. Brocious' home run against Byung Young Kim, Tino's home run against Byung Young Kim, Derek Jeter's Mr. November home run.
Right.
They stand as great moments in baseball history, and the Yankees lost the series.
Right, and imagine what would have happened if they had won the series.
I don't think it could be any bigger.
Some of the spikes of those moments were taken out by the fact that they ended up losing the next two games in Arizona.
The only big moment that got swallowed up by the Yankees losing was Soriano's home run that gave the Yankees a lead in Game 7. Nobody remembers that. It would be one of the great World Series home runs ever, but it gets swallowed up by the fact that Luis Gonzalez blooped a single over a drawn-in infield to win the game.
Right.
But the home runs by... especially with the circumstances of what was going on in the world.
Of course, but imagine how much bigger it would be had they won. How much bigger the Fisk home run would be if they turned around and they won Game 7. I'm not saying we're ever going to forget Game 4. We're not going to forget it. Actually, it happened. And it was an amazing game. But I'm saying for it to go down in history is even bigger. It's got to be attached to it leading to the ultimate championship. And I think if the Yankees had won in 2001, Michael, it would probably be talked about as the greatest championship the Yankees ever got.
Right?
That would be it. It'd be number one.
No, I don't know. Well,
easily number one.
Julie Schwartz tweeted out a really good point. Aaron Boone's home run against the Red Sox, great Yankee moment, but they lost in the World Series. She's right.
It's still a great moment, but imagine how iconic it would have been.
You know what? I don't know.
You don't think some of the Boone spice not only went out the door because they lost to the Marlins, but then the Red Sox won the World Series the next year?
No, I don't. I think he's in Yankee history forever. They still beat the Red Sox.
But it's never going to be as big as Bucky Dent's home run. Do you think we're talking about Bucky Dent's home run if they ended up losing to the Dodgers in 78?
But Bucky Dent's home run did not get them into the World Series. Aaron Boone's did.
I know, but Michael, that Bucky Dent home run is still bigger. Why? Because they ended up winning the World Series. It's not even close which is bigger, the Bucky Dent home run or the Boone home run. So didn't that tell you something? One literally put the team in the World Series.
I would disagree that they are close because one took them into the playoffs and the other one put them into the World Series.
I know, but come on. You're telling me that history remembers Boone better than Dent?
It's in the conversation. You're saying it's not even close. I think you're wrong.
I don't think it is close.
They both have the same middle name in Boston.
It has the middle, Peter. It has the middle name because that was the middle name for Dent. Right?
But they put that home run on the same
Dent,
level
so
as
they
Dent.
So they say it about Aaron blanking Boone because that's what they call Dent.
Right, so they put him on the same level.
But they stole from one to do the other one. To put him into the world. The fact that Dent is easily bigger. History-wise. Because Yankee fans look at it and they not only did they lose in 03 to a Marlin team they probably should have beaten. And then the Red Sox end up ending the curse the very next year by beating the Yankees. You don't think that took the spice away from Boone?
No, that was the next year. And I think the Andy Chavez catch is one of the great postseason catches ever.
But you didn't even win the game. Never mind.
It's still
a great catch. I still remember the catch, Michael. It still gets talked about 20 years later. So obviously, not 20 years, 14 years later, it's still a significant catch. But imagine if they had won that game and then won the World Series.
Peter,
right?
The story from Verducci that you're I just retweeted it so you could read it.
If you're going to say what I think you're going to say, there's a piece of this story that tickles me that I'll be doing in ENN.
Oh, you don't want to do it now at 4 o'clock, 4:30?
Do you mean about Phillip's background? About Phillip's childhood?
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, well, then you tell me what you were going to say.
I think there's a story, Peter.
I want you to read the story. There's the picture of the ball because you're saying that Tom made it up.
Oh. I was just saying that what he said sounds too perfect.
He didn't make it up, Peter. What happened, the story goes that Verducci actually has 20 signed baseballs from his birthday of the past from players that didn't have walk-off.
See now, Dom, I know what you're doing. You're going full circle to Michael about the walk-off conversation with Dusty Baker.
Right.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Did anybody catch yesterday Joe Buck during the World Series game when he flat out called the Astros cheaters and said that they changed the narrative on Kershaw's career because they knew what pitch was coming in the game that he, blew up. That was looked at as, well, he can't win big games. And somebody said this on Twitter, and I thought of it as well. There are very few people in our business that have the power that they could say whatever they want. Let's say Rob Manfred was really red hot that Joe Buck said that. Joe Buck could say, take a flying leap. I'll just go do the NFL. He has that. He could say anything he wants. He doesn't have to worry about job security. He doesn't ever have to worry about paying bills. He might be one of the most powerful people behind a microphone in our country. He flat out said, well, obviously the Astros are cheaters. That was proven, and they were punished for it. And then he told the whole story about how Kershaw gave up all those runs in the game that could have started this whole narrative.
Love it. Good for him.
He's telling the truth. At least he had the truth on his side.
Yeah, but sometimes you could tell the truth and the national rights holder will get a call. I'm sure the NFL does this a lot to some people. Hey, you want to renew your rights? This can't go on.
Michael, will you talk me through the attempted steal of home yesterday?
I didn't like it. Everybody's saying it was great. It's not analytic. I'm sure that was analyzed to the nth second because of the way Kershaw raises his hands in the stretch. Kershaw made an unbelievable play without balking because he quickly stepped off the rubber and threw home. Why are you stealing there? So they had first and third, nobody out. They didn't score a run. That's the game. And that was the final out of the inning. And I actually think he was safe. I don't know why. He tagged his helmet that was off his head.
Oh, is that what people thought, was that he tagged the helmet?
He did tag the helmet, which came off of his head.
I thought it was like he got the arm on the
wing. No, the arm got he did a swim move, and he thought automatically he was safe. I don't get that. I don't understand it. But again, it was probably analyzed. If this happens, you're on third with Kershaw on the mound and somebody on the plate that we don't think has a good boom, go. And he almost did it.
Did the runner advance to second?
No, it was the final out.
Oh, that was the final out. They started first and third, and that ended it. Right. It was interesting, though, and I did think he had a chance.
Well, here is a cut of Kevin Cash of the Rays speaking about why Margot attempted the steal.
I know Kershaw has the real high handset, whatever he does, and I think Manny just felt like he had a beat on it that he could time him up. Frustrating inning. Man on third, no outs. Then first and third, no outs. Pop up, strike out, and then get thrown out trying to do that. Ideally, we got to find a way to get that guy in to tie the game right there.
Yeah, that was the game. Well, that was the game.
Kind of sounds to me like there might have been a message to everyone. Listen, if you're at third base and the way Kershaw's windup is, if you think you got a chance, go for it. Doesn't it sound like that?
Absolutely, that's what happened. They parsed this. They probably, it was like a Zapruder film.
Right.
Have to get this sort of lead. You have to be this fast of a runner when he's up at the top of his stretch, and then there's just go. But Kershaw should have balked. And most pitchers would have balked.
Well, I think that factors into the analytics, right? You're either going to make it or he's going to balk trying to get you.
Right. But he's a veteran enough, he just stepped off and threw home.
And that's what it comes right down to, right? You're at third base with two outs, so they weigh the odds. Are we going to get a hit here? Or is he going to steal it clean or balk? And the odds probably said that he was either going to either going to be safe or that Kershaw was going to balk.
So Margot is completely lying and saying he made the decision.
Well, he probably, I mean, he made the decision with all the information. If you're on this bay, go. And I'm sure he ran it by the third base coach.
I don't think there was a sign to go, but he probably knows that he was in the situation where if he feels like he could make it, that he can go.
Let's go to John in New Jersey. John.
Hey, guys. It's John from New Jersey. I just have a quick question for you guys. First of all, I wanted to say that I love you guys. You're hysterical. It's great listening to you on the ride home.
Thanks.
Michael, if I missed this in one of your interviews with Aaron Boone, please excuse me, but could you do me a favor? I've been a Yankee fan for as long as I've been alive. I'm 54 years old. I just get frustrated to heck with the fact that these guys don't hustle. I feel like watching Sanchez and watching Hicks sometimes. I feel like a lot of these guys take a lot of plays off, and you don't see that from youngsters like the Rays who are killing themselves for every single base. When Hicks hit that home run against the Mets and stood there and watched it go an inch over the wall, I was actually dying for it to hit the wall so he could be stranded at first base, so that someone could finally say something about it. I think it's a real reflection on Aaron Boone's ability to get these guys motivated, and it drives me freaking nuts.
Well, it's funny you brought this point up. Now, the standing and looking at the home runs, a Rosarena, they all do it. I mean, the Dodgers do it. I don't think you're going to stop these guys from doing that because it's celebrated and it's shown on all the highlight show. But I noticed one thing. Both the Dodgers and the Rays, every single player, when they hit a ground ball, they're running down the first base as if their hair is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is complicated. With the Yankees, there are some heavy-legged guys that don't run well, and they also have a lot of leg injuries. But I'm not going to give them a pass because I don't see them run as hard as I see the Rays and the Dodgers run every single time to first base, because you're putting pressure on infielders to make throws in a hurry. Hurry the throw. Hurry the way they set their feet. I don't see enough of that in baseball. Now, I know what the Yankees would say, because I used to ask this of Joe Girardi when guys wouldn't, when Robbie Cano wouldn't run hard to first. I'd rather have Robbie Cano jog to first base on a normal ground ball and have him play 161 games than tear a hamstring, but then get players that aren't going to tear hamstrings running hard down to first base, because I think that's an important part of both of the teams that are in the World Series. They put pressure on the defense because they run hard every single time. Nobody's jogging out of the box on a ground ball. They're jogging on home runs. Let's be honest, they are, but the not on ground balls. To me, that's unacceptable. Yeah, it's just unacceptable.
Now, I'd love to get Peter's thought on this, too, because this popped into my mind quite a few times during the World Series, and I'm glad that this got brought up. Not from a lack of hustle standpoint, but Michael, correct me if I'm wrong. Peter, correct me if I'm wrong.
Go ahead.
When I watch this World Series, and when I watch the playoffs in general, boy, they look like they're having fun. And I say to myself, I never see the Yankees look like they're having fun. Like, these guys are the way that they celebrate, the way that they just seem so engaged. Like, it looks like they're just having the time of their lives. The Yankees just, to me, feel corporate. They feel, I don't know if it's the pressure of the moment or they can't enjoy themselves because the only way they are allowed to is when they finally win the actual game that clinches the championship. But boy, it just feels like
I've seen them behave. I mean, when they're on a roll, they're as joyous as these two teams are.
I don't know. You listen. You've
well, this past year, there was a lot of really flat spots, but when they won the 10 in a row, they were having a blast.
I understand what Don's saying. I have seen this Yankee team have fun, but there is their default position. I don't know if it's about the corporate thing or if it's about expectation. I mean, Tampa's able to have fun because it's like, oh my God, we're here. This is happening. With the Yankees, it feels like the joy can't come until they win the entire thing because it's expected.
The Dodgers are expected to win a World Series. They seem like they're having fun.
I know, but So I don't see it. I've seen moments. It was a couple of years ago they were doing the whole fake camera when somebody had a home run in the dugout. I'm not saying that they're bereft of having fun, but the explosion and the excitement on an almost consistent basis. I don't think there's like a lack of hustle or a lack of desire. I just God, I'd like to see them with their hair done.
I hate to use the word hustle just to get back what the caller said. I want everybody on the team to run down to first base like Tyler Wade does. I don't think that's asking that much. Even if you're not fast, if you run as fast as you can, you're going to put I've seen guys that don't have leg injuries. They just jog on a ground ball. Now, it's hard to do over 162 games. I guess I understand that. But there should be busting out of the box every single ground ball, and I don't see it. And it came to my attention when I was watching this World Series where it seems like every guy, it's a bang-bang play at first base. That they have to look at the replay. That's how tight it is. That should be every team. That should be every player. Even if you're slow.
And it could cause mistakes. But I guess you're not thinking like that when all of your thought is hitting the ball 500 feet and being disappointed when you don't. I think that's what ends up happening, right? Is that every time you don't hit the ball out, it's that jolt of disappointment. Instead of realizing, all right, you didn't hit a home run, but something good can happen here. Hustle down first base. Maybe he throws it into the stands and you're standing on second base. Maybe you beat it out. Maybe you created the start of a big inning. I think the attitude's all out of whack.
How about this hot take from Jeff Passan, Don and Peter's number one guest? So Scott Coleman tweets out, my annual tweet that Halloween is the most overrated holiday. Thank you. Passan writes back, I'd rather go down a razor blade slide into a pool of rubbing alcohol.
Then what?
Then celebrate Halloween.
Then even like acknowledge the holiday? I mean,
that is...
He's losing you guys.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.